I've done that all my life. I have a lot of these people about the old Fitzgerald thing. Because I find it so hard. So the whole economic, the monetary world is impossible to understand because it's so complex. And you have to simplify it.
Put down your level.
Yeah, well, anybody's level. Right. You know, anybody. That's, you know what I mean.
Right.
But the extraordinary point, the most extraordinary thing that I learned from this was that it did not make any difference how big the country was. In other words, in Ceylon, if I made the decision for the Central Bank of Ceylon to pour water into its little reservoir, I've got to go out like that, you know, just in days. And the loss to me was that I added Ceylon government security to the portfolio of the central bank, but I lost sterling security, foreign security. And then I saw that the same thing worked in the United States. In 1958, I had this demonstration. It was extraordinary. Federal Reserve bought $2.25 trillion of government securities, and we defended the dollar with gold, and we lost $2.25 trillion of gold, just like that.
What was your reaction to it?
Well, my reaction was, the first thing I did was call Bob Ralston, you know, who thought all the government, and told him, and he saw it right away. But then this quarrel with the Federal Reserve Board in Washington went on and on and on. And now that was 58, and early 59 I went to Citibank. And you know that they assigned one of my old colleagues, Herbert Firth, an Austrian economist, to contest this proposition, this cause and effect relationship. And they said, I have in my file a whole long correspondence between us, memoranda they were. He would write these memoranda, and I'd write a memorandum rebutting it. Because, no one at the Federal Reserve Board understood this. This is one of the points that I want to make. I'll put it in now because, and that is that because of this unique experience, now you've seen what I've had. I was at the Federal Reserve Board as an economist. I went there in 1945. I helped set up the Central Bank of the Philippines. I visited all these economies. I had a hand in Japan. I saw what went on in Japan. Then I went back to the Philippines and helped them set up a central bank. By the way, one of us might have been asked to become governor there, but they put in that the governor of the Central Bank of the Philippines must be a natural born Filipino. And in Ceylon, they didn't do that. Anyway, and then I went to Ceylon, and here I was, an American governor of the Central Bank in the Sterling area. So I discovered that when I went to the Bank of England, they rolled out the red carpet. They would send me Rolls Royce, you know, to the airport to pick me up. And I'd be put up in the best hotel, and they have in the Bank of England, they have what is called the governor's parlor. The parlors of the Bank of England are the office area that's cut off from the rest of the bank, and it's all red carpeted and everything. And only the governor and the deputy governor and the six executive directors have offices there. They would always give me an office there. it was a fantastic experience for a young guy to have. I was 39 when I became governor. the point I'm making that these experiences, having that experience at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, that board in Washington is a government bureaucracy. You know, there's just a lot of economists. They don't have any transactions going across the book. I have transactions. I was doing this. And this gave me, in my thinking, a quality of first-hand. The problem with the people at the Federal Reserve Board was they were thinking second-hand. They were imagining in many cases how it worked. They didn't see how it worked. I had this extraordinary opportunity to see how it worked. And then I went from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York to the Citibank. It was called First National City when I joined it. And there I had the bank relationships with foreign governments and foreign central banks all over the world. And so I continued to have all these relationships. And I didn't actually do the operations, but I had the bank's relations with all these central banks, and we had almost as many central bank accounts as I had had in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
You just that sensible.
Yeah.
Why did you leave the Federal Reserve because of what had taken place?
Ah, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. Yes. I did not leave. I was not unhappy. I was a little disappointed because I was hired there by Alan Sproul, who was the president in 1954. And he left in 1956. And instead of promoting one of us, it would have been either Bob Rosa, who by that time, I told you I've known Bob Rosa, our brother, and he's now at the Brown Brothers Council. He was in charge of the economics department. I was in charge of the foreign department. Either one of us was a good candidate for to succeed Alan Sproul as president. But they went out of the bank. They brought in a vice president of New York Trust Company, Al Hayes, as president. I was a little frustrated there. Al was my age. So when Citibank offered me a job, I thought they were greener pastures and more money and everything. So I went. I was. But on the other hand, in 1960, Kennedy was elected. And I became frightened of Kennedy in the campaign because he was talking very glibly about the weakness of the dollar and all that, and the gold bar. As a matter of fact, during that campaign, there was something of a run on gold. Gold went up from $35 to $40 an ounce in 1960. This was long before the gold winter was closed. But this is not something that ought to be put in, but it's interesting. So, I'll tell you what it was for you. The Federal Reserve never paid gold out to private people. We paid it out only to central banks. That $2.25 billion that I paid out in 1958 was all taken by central banks because Roosevelt had prohibited Americans from holding gold. So we didn't. Dollars were not redeemable by Americans in gold. They were redeemable by foreign central banks. That's the system. Only they. Only central banks. Yeah. That was enough to keep the gold standard operating. That's all you need is what redemption by central, free redemption by central banks at $35 an hour. But, as I mentioned earlier, that the British had opened the gold market in March 1964. And I was all for it. But I found my colleagues, I found Alan Stahl and Bob Rosa and other people in the bank, had opposed it before I came in. But when I came in, they said, oh, that was a great move. Well, they were all, I had to argue with them, see? And I don't know that I ever did convince them. But that gold market became more and more important through the 50s and into the 60s. And the Bank of England was supporting the gold market. Private people were, for instance, that all those government purchases and those gold losses in 1958 caused a lot of private people to buy gold in the London gold market. Americans could still hold gold abroad. I don't know whether you knew that. That's very important. We couldn't hold it in the United States, but we could hold it abroad. And it was not until Eisenhower, January 1961, Eisenhower prohibited Americans from holding gold abroad. That was my colleague Bob Rosa, who got him to do that. Through the president, through Henry Alexander, the chairman of Morgan Guaranty Trust. Oh boy, I didn't know about it. I would have thought that. And Henry Alexander was a very dear friend of mine. If I'd known that Bob Rosa was doing that, I would have scotched it.
I wonder how they
enforced
it.
But anyway, the point I'm getting up to is that people were buying gold around the world, and they were buying it mostly in the London gold market. Well, the London gold market would run out of gold to be at $35 an ounce. So the Bank of England would keep the gold in to the London gold market. And in 1960, the Bank of England said, we're not gonna feed it in anymore. By this time, I was in City Bank. And my old colleagues in the Fed didn't see that the Fed and the Treasury would have to permit the Bank of England to replenish this gold at the Treasury. And I had the top gold man of the Bank of England come around here for dinner one night. He called me up and gold was going up to $40 an ounce. And he called me up, he said, John, I can't come to dinner tonight. There's a meeting been called in Washington. And it was at that meeting in Washington with Bob Anderson, who was Secretary of the Treasury, and the Undersecretary was, a number of others. Anyway, Bob Anderson was Secretary of the Treasury, was at that meeting that the Treasury agreed to sell gold to the Bank of England to pump the gold into the London gold market. I was telling my colleagues at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, this is not the British pound that's under attack, this is the dollar that's under attack. You've got to defend it. That was sort of the beginning of the private purchases of gold on a big scale. We'll come to that paper I did, we'll come to that later. And the minute that agreement was announced, the gold price of gold fell from $40 to $45. That's another thing that's very interesting to mind. Just like that, went right down.
In a day.
I mean, I would have to go look it up.
Okay.
Not in a week. You'd have that.
Yeah,
you look.
Yeah.
I'll give you the date. I can almost give you the date. It had to be,
oh, look at that, Mark.
It had to be October 1960, just before the election. Some day in mid, about mid or the 20th of October, right in there. And it was a lot of the blame was on Kennedy, because Kennedy was talking so easily about gold and the dollar. He didn't understand it at all at that time. And he was, and people were afraid he'd be elected, and that this would drag the price of gold up. We'd have to go off gold or something like that. And that stopped it right away. Well, I'll go to the 60s next. By this time, I was in the Federal Reserve, and one of the questions you asked me was when I first purchased gold and why. Now we're getting up to that. You can see the background.
Yes.
Now you can see why, how I have become what I am. And Kennedy was elected, and I thought it was a disaster. Later, when I saw what Nixon did when he was elected in 1968, maybe it didn't make all that difference. But at this time, since I was an old Federal Reserve man, I was the principal liaison between Citibank in New York and the Federal Reserve Board in Washington. I would go down regularly, and of course I knew Bill Martin well. I knew him intimately. And when Kennedy was elected, he had never met Martin. I'll put it the other way around. Martin had never met Kennedy. Martin had never met Kennedy. And this went on for months. I go down there, and Martin's telling, no, I still haven't. And then I went down there, and my golly, Martin had met. So this was not until, I think, about February. I have all this in my diary, but it doesn't make that much difference. In other words, Homer was longer than that, because he wasn't inaugurated until January, until the end of January. So it must have been about April, May, or several months before Kennedy had so much to do, you know, and the Federal Reserve was really supposed to be an independent agency, independent of the administration. Kennedy just didn't get around to it, I'm sure. But Martin was so elated when Kennedy finally called him over. They met. And then I gradually saw Kennedy wrap Martin right around his finger. I go in here, and Kennedy and Martin would tell me another story. He said, you know, I saw Kennedy, and Kennedy says that the Federal Reserve that was responsible for electing me. It was this tight money. See, after that easy money in 1958, the Fed tightened in 1959 and 60. 1969, interest rates went up, and we had an issue of what was called the Magic Five. Have you ever heard of the Magic Five? Magic Five was the magic of the fives, where they were treasury notes at 5%, which had been unthinkable, you see. And these were supposed to be able to pull money from the moon, these Magic Five. And it was a tight money policy. and those days. Well, lo and behold, it's in the economy now. We had a recovery in 59, but then in 60, the economy stopped out and turned down. And on the 1st of November, let's say the election was the 4th, about 3 days before the election or 4 days before the election, they announced an increase in unemployment. And this was a big issue between Kennedy and Nixon. And Illinois was a key state. And Mayor Daley of Chicago was on Kennedy's side, of course. And the minute that unemployment rate turned up flat, he got everybody in Illinois all worked up, and Illinois went for Kennedy by a hair, just a hair. And that was all it needed. That was all it was. And so Kennedy argued with Martin that it was the tight money of 1959 and 1960 that had caused that recession, and that recession had defeated Nixon and elected him. And Nixon wrote his book, Six Crises, and in chapter 89, I forgot which one, he has a whole chapter on it. And he said it was the tight money of the Federal Reserve in 1959 and 60 that elected Kennedy. And Kennedy never, to my knowledge, Kennedy never said his puppet, but here I was meeting with Martin all the time and getting this. One day I went to see Martin, and he was just elated. He said, last weekend, my wife and I went to New York. We always went to New York and stayed at the record store. And I knew her, by the way. She's the daughter of David, who gave the Davis Cup. The Davis Cup tennis manager. He's that Davis' daughter. I've forgotten his first name. But anyway, Martin never had to work all that hard. he could afford the low pay of the Federal Reserve. It was low, really low. But they would come in New York and stay at the Racquet Club, and he would play tennis there. He was a great tennis player. By the way, he played a lot of tennis with Walt Ritson later on there. Last year he played at that time. He said we were there on Friday, got there Friday afternoon, and I had no longer gotten in, and there was a call from the White House. And it was Kennedy on the phone who said, look, Bill, I'm free tomorrow. And could you possibly come back and we'll have a chat? And so they were going to the theater that night, so they went to the theater, and Mike got on a shuttle the next morning and went to White House and Kennedy breathing. Bill, he said, I saw it all through, and I'm convinced it was not the tight money of 59 and 60. You convinced me. Martin was so pleased. But I could see this was about 60, late 61, early 62. I would have it in my diary. Anyway, I could see that Martin was sending Kennedy's hand. So if you